Hi, my name is Bob Sander, and I'm a professional storyteller. For over 30 years, my repertoire has included a group of personal narrative stories. Some of these are childhood memories, stories lived when, well, basically when I was a knucklehead in training, so to speak. Other stories come from my college student era, and still others date from my time as a beginner parent. And you know, by then I was kind of a professional knucklehead. While I do tell personal tales that are, well, either too risque or too this or too that to include here, you know, if you come to dinner some night, we'll eat and drink and I'll spill the beans on all those stories. But this collection, this bunch makes the cut. So I hope you enjoy them. And as for truthfulness, well, just know that these stories are absolutely 100% as true as I can make them. Enjoy. In 1920s Indianapolis, full-bodied, deep summer heat pushed folks out onto their porches in my dad's old neighborhood. Expansive and shaded, those porches were popular for good reason. There was no air conditioning. AC for home use didn't come around until the 50s. Meanwhile, a little breeze and some lemonade on a sheltered porch was just the thing to beat the heat. Plus, it was a good place to share stories and news and even gossip. Might even say, especially gossip. Gossip need not always be a mean thing, you know. It could also be a way for a community to keep apprised of itself. Stay in touch with how folks were doing. Parents and siblings, aunts, uncles, cousins, near neighbors, everyone's house was so close together, you could borrow a cup of sugar by simply reaching out mutual kitchen windows. My dad's neighborhood was made up of mostly Germans around New Jersey and Orange and Sanders streets, in the Indianapolis near south side of that day. My old great auntie said her elementary classes spoke German up until the fourth grade. Nearby businesses were run by Germans. Most of my dad's relatives, Germans on both sides of the family, lived within a 2 or 3 block radius. Dad said Saturdays were proof that kids in his day entertained themselves better than kids now. And a lot of that happened out on one of those porches. He said kids then knew lots of games, riddles, songs, and the like, and they were all stored in their heads. A favorite game was marbles. Every kid owned plenty, Aggies and Steelies and Cat Eyes and such. They also had Barlow knives to keep them occupied, the better to play a game called Mumbly Peg. And there were newspapers to make kites out of, and of course, Pleasant Run Creek, which at that time still hosted edible fish and good swimming holes, and on and on. But, he opined, Saturdays were mainly good for 3 reasons. 1, they turned into a coffee klatch when neighbor ladies brought over fresh baked goods. 2, the ladies shared stories and gossip that kids weren't supposed to hear. But if you crawled up underneath that porch, you'd hear them anyway. And 3, farmers from the greenhouses down on Bluff Road, on the old south side, they might come along with fruits and vegetables for sale. My dad remembered one farmer in particular, said you could hear him coming a mile away. Said first thing you'd hear was strawberries, blueberries, peaches, asparagus, radishes, sweet lettuce, and watermelons. It was a kind of a cross between a yell and a song. It was a sweet little lie, my dad said. We all knew you couldn't have all those foods at the same time, not like supermarkets today. There was only what was in season, ripe. But strung all together, it just sings better. Besides, he had a good voice, and we liked to hear it, and nobody cared a speck if all that food was not there at the same time. My dad continued. Next came another sound. Clop, clop, creak, clop, clop, creak. It was his big horse-drawn wagon. Music to the ears. The rims of the big wood-spoke wheel were clad in iron. And what a clatter they made on the brick streets, along with the horses' hooves that all rang out so loud. Kids came from all directions. We knew he had a straw-covered block of ice, or maybe more than one, in the back of his wagon. That's to keep all his baskets of fruit and vegetables cool and fresh. He carried a long, pointed steel ice pick with him. Often as not, he'd chip off shards for us kids to suck on. Not as good as ice cream, of course, but on a hazy, hot Saturday, with your sweaty clothes sticking to you like the skin of a grape, ice was just fine. Plus, there was that horse. Dad remembered that horse very well. Said at first, kids were afraid of it because it was so big, a Belgian, maybe, or a Percheron. Towered above everybody, adults included. It would blow its nose loudly every time they approached. The farmer scolded the horse in German and told the kids it was nothing. Said the horse did that just to see what they would do. Then he would sweet-talk the horse to gentle it, and the kids, till they all drew close together again, close enough to feel the heat radiate from its big body, close enough to see particular muscles ripple just beneath that taut, furred skin, so as to shoo a fly off its foreleg. One by one, they stuck out their tentative hands, and they petted that massive creature. True to the farmer's word, the horse really was gentle at heart. "Horse's name might have been Gray. I can't remember for sure." I thought my dad's recall of horse details was very specific and evocative. I asked him what it felt like for an 8-year-old to stand so close to such a giant. "Well, I don't know. I was not there."
Well, of course you were there. You just said you were there. You described it down to the fly on the horse's leg.
"Well, yes. I mean, I was there, but not exactly like you'd think."
"Well, what's that supposed to mean? Either you were there or you weren't there."
"No, that's not true. A person can be there and not be exactly there at the same time. I know that for a fact."
"Dad, what are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. Just tell me what do you mean?"
"Rush, rush, rush," he said. "Why are you always in such a rush? Stories aren't like trains with schedules. Stories come out in their own good time. Why, the Saturdays I'm talking about, your great Uncle Max could coax a 10-minute story to last for over an hour. Easy. Took pleasure in it, too."
"All right, go ahead. I'm listening." My dad usually did this. He stretched out a tale. And, you know, truth be known, I actually loved it when he did it. Getting to the point too quickly just took all the wind out of the sails.
"Well," he said, "the neighbors had this bush."
Then he went on to tell me. The bush evidently was lush and green in summer with long, swooping limbs that began in a central circle of growth, swept skyward, and then arched gently back down and brushed the ground, fountain-like. Years of growth had pushed that bush's circumference outwards, like an expanding smoke ring. The core of it was hollow. My father and his cousin Art discovered the empty center. A tiny opening led into it. No one else knew about it, even though they could look out through the many branches and see everything in a 360-degree sweep. No one could see them. It's like peeking from the crack of an open hall door. They were hidden and as good as invisible. The bush was close to the road and also right next to the spot where the farmer always stopped. So from my dad's vantage point within that bush, he could see out but not be seen. He was, in fact, both there and not there.
You see what I'm saying?"
"Yes, yes, okay, I see, I get it."
"Just like I said."
Oh, he loved those gotcha moments. But I had a response, too. "Dad, it still begs the question, why were you hiding in a bush? Why weren't you out there with everyone else? You didn't get to pet the horse. You didn't get any ice cream. I mean, what's the point?"
"Don't rush the story. A story has got its own speed.
It resolves in its own time. Thought I told you that once. Okay, go on. Apropos of nothing, he began a discourse on the proper way to hold a catfish while taking out a fishing hook so as not to get gored by its malicious knife-like fins. By and by, feeling I was properly chastised for my impatience, he circled back into the story. We were not out there with the others because we had bigger plans.
Yeah, really? Like what?
I'll tell you like what. We were waiting for the day when that farmer stocked what we were after. Watermelons.
You don't know my dad, but he was mostly serious as an adult. These little narrations came on the infrequent occasions when he diverged from that serious mold. Little tiny openings, just brief little windows. They let me glimpse my much older father's life and times as a boy. And when he told these rare stories, there was this mischievous light that hazed his eyes. At the mention of the word watermelons, that light positively glowed.
Art and I were quiet as two night crawlers on a summer night.
Well, that's not saying much. Night crawlers don't make noise anyway.
He gave me a devastating look, and then he continued. When the produce was bought and the adults were gone and the kids got a last pet of that horse, you know, by God, his name was Gray, or I'm a monkey's uncle. Anyway, when everyone was good and gone, the farmer took the reins and gave him a big shake. Said, "Yah, get up there, Gray." And clop, clop, creak, clop, clop, creak. Away down the road they went. Now, when the back of that wagon passed our bush, we boiled out of there like ants from an ant hill you just stepped on.
He looked down at my foot at that moment with a worried expression. And although we were inside, sitting at the kitchen table, I looked at my foot, too, as if those ants were headed up my leg.
"Figure of speech," he said, pretty pleased that he had made me look.
I know. Just go on.
Like I was saying, we boiled out of there and got right up behind the lip of that wagon. It was lurching down the street. Art put his hands together, like this,
my dad illustrated by lacing his fingers together as he were getting ready to do a fireman's carry.
I put my right foot in that cradle of his hands, and with a quick boost and a jump, I flew through the air and landed on the bed of that wagon. Quick as a wink, I grabbed the biggest watermelon I could see, tossed it down to Art.
You stole a watermelon?
My dad was honest as the day is long. I never knew him to do anything like this ever in my life. Absolutely.
The light in his eyes was beaming like a lighthouse.
Off we ran. I knew the neighborhood like the back of my hand. So did Art. We had an elaborate escape route. Almost felt sorry for the farmer. Seemed like he didn't stand half a chance to catch us. We ran so fast our hearts were in our mouths. At some point we chanced a quick glance behind us. The farmer was not chasing us. He was still plodding on down the street, just like usual. Hadn't even noticed our daring highway robbery. What a disappointment. We came to our robber's den as your Grandpa Bierman's wood shop. No one was around. For the next hour and more, we had us a grand time eating watermelon, seeing who could spit the seeds the furthest. Even better, we devised a measles contest. That is, you see who could spit and stick the most seeds on the other guy's face. We couldn't leave evidence lying around. There was only one thing to do, get rid of it all. So we ate the whole thing. Packed up the rinds and threw them into Pleasant Run Creek. Figured those turtles would make short work of them. And later that night, we learned what the saying, "Crime never pays," actually means.
Aha, your conscience got the better of you.
No, that watermelon got the better of us. I must have gone to the John 15 times. I saw Art the next day. I didn't even have to ask how was he doing. He looked like I felt. But, you know, time is a magical potion. It only took a wee bit of it, and by the end of that week, we felt good enough to do it all again.
Now, wait a minute. You were going to tell about a time you got in trouble as a kid. This sounds like trouble you caused but never got caught.
Don't rush the story. Story's got a speed all its own. It turns out in its own time. I told you that already, right?
A few minutes passed during which I did my best to look humbled and chastised. It was frustrating, which he both knew and enjoyed.
All right, then. Come next Saturday morning, and even the one after that, the farmer was back with more watermelons. Each Saturday night, Art and I suffered mightily from our successes. If someone had offered us another melon on Sunday, we'd never have touched it. But with a week in between melons to heal and revel in our glory as highwaymen, we were always ready to do it again the following Saturday. It was for honor, as minor league bandits demanded it. Must have been the fourth Saturday then, after we boiled out from that bush, and Art laced his hands into a boost, and I flew through the air and landed on the wagon lip. Must have been then, just as I turned to throw that melon down to Art. That's when it happened.
I sat forward in my chair. I sensed the climactic moment had arrived.
All of a sudden, that farmer turned around and started swearing at me in German. You don't need to be schooled up in a language to know when you're being cussed in that language. Before I could jump down and join Art in the watermelon, the old man looked me right in the face. Likely his money hadn't matched up with the melon count lately. He was on the lookout for something gone haywire, like us. We ran off doing 60. Strange to say, he still did not chase us. We counted ourselves lucky. Even swore off watermelons. Now the next day we were all in church, right in the middle of the minister's sermon, when there was a long creak. Everybody turned to see who had come in so late. It was that farmer. He was not a member of our congregation, but people recognized him right away. Evidently he'd come to hear the Lord's word from our preacher. This was a marvel and a miracle in itself, since it was widely known how our minister had perfected a powerful sleep-inducing method of speaking.
Here I interrupted my father yet again. I couldn't help it. My mind was just racing. Oh, my God, you got caught in church in front of Grandpa and Grandma, your sister, all the relatives, all the neighbors, and the minister?
Foolish me. Will you ever leave off rushing things, Bobby? What do you want? I should just shut up and say, yup, and that's the end?
No, I said meekly. I want the details.
So then?
Pause here long enough for me to eat some crow. So I'll hush up.
Huh!
A deafening silence of disapproval followed. By and by he resumed.
The closed eyes and whistle of my father's nose meant he'd fallen under the spell of our minister's sermon technique. I decided to make myself scarce. I slid down the pew. The pews were big and wide and slick. My skinny body slid like a well-soaped window in a loose frame. I made it to the coat room, and I hid. As people were leaving after the service, the farmer whispered something private to the minister. Later, the farmer found my father, that'd be your grandpa, and they talked for a minute, then that farmer left. I was sure I was caught, but nothing happened. Nothing at all. All the way home and even afterwards at dinner, it was just Sunday dining as usual. Cousin Art's folks were there. Everyone was cheerful and pleasant. It was a nice affair. We played out in the street after dinner. I told Cousin Art all about it. He said just the right thing, too. The Lord works in mysterious ways. Art said for that farmer to show up in church and for nothing to come of it, that was likely a sign from God that we were correct in our inclination to give up on watermelons. Cousin Art always knew how to interpret the Bible in a pleasing way. Clear through Thursday, we followed the Lord's mysterious guidance. We were quits on watermelons. But by Friday, we began to waver. There had been no further word from God. Your grandpa hadn't said boo. Art offered how he might have been wrong in his selection of scripture. He even mentioned an alternative verse. The Lord helps those who help themselves. My dad said come Saturday, he and Art were once back again in their favorite spot, in the bush. First came the clop-clop creak of the wheels and hooves, and then the song, strawberries, blueberries, peaches, asparagus, watermelons. Like always, we boiled out of that bush. Cousin Art laced up his fingers, and with a swift boost, I shot into the air, headed for the lip of that wagon. But my feet never touched down. I just stayed there, suspended in midair. With those words, my dad suspended the story in midair, too. He said he was hungry, and he padded off to make a sandwich out of the pickled herring he'd bought from Shapiro's Delicatessen and the dark Reagan's rye bread he favored, which came from the bakery next door. He topped it with a dollop of sauerkraut and washed it all down with a swig of beer. Throughout this whole detour, he expounded on various subjects, including a prize he had won for being voted the best paperboy in 1927, which was a trip to the Chicago Field Museum. Meanwhile, I was still waiting, not very patiently, back at the words suspended in midair. Finally, he resumed. Where was I? Well, suspended in midair, I offered. Of course, he knew full well where he paused, and I knew that he knew, and he knew that I knew he knew, and so on. Right. I just stayed there, suspended in midair. He paused briefly, expecting me to interrupt at the seeming impossibility of this scenario, which I refused to do. Slightly irritated, he continued, because a huge arm and a big claw-like hand swept down out of nowhere and grabbed me by the back of my shirt collar, held me up in midair, feet and legs pumping like a pill bug laid on its back. And who do you suppose that was? The farmer. No, it was your grandpa. What you think you're doing? Grandpa asked me.
I bet I know what your answer was, I said.
What?
I bet you said nothing. As it turns out, this was actually correct.
Of course you'd know that. You're my son. But your grandpa did not like that answer. He said to me, no, you're not doing no nothing. You're stealing the watermelons.
My dad told me the next thing he knew they were in the woodshed behind the family house. Wood and coal were stored there, but punishment was meted out there too. When I asked if he would tell me specifically what his punishment was, he just said he did not sit down for 3 days. When I said that was an unusual thing to ask of a child, he said no, I had misunderstood. He clarified, saying he didn't want to sit down for 3 days. And while I knew he was exaggerating for effect, I also knew there was more than a grain of truth in it. So, Dad, tell me this. Did you ever do that again? Snitch watermelons, or anything else for that matter. He gave me a serious look, and in a very level voice he said, Are you crazy? And that was the end of the story, for a while. But a few years later, a new thought occurred to me, and I just had to ask. Hey, Dad, do you remember when you told me the watermelon story a few years ago?
I remember.
And I asked if you ever did that again, and you said to me, Are you crazy?
I remember that, too.
Well, I always figured you meant, like, are you crazy? I would never do that again and risk getting caught and punished.
But lately I've started to wonder if maybe you meant something else. Like, are you crazy? We figured out another way to do it and not get caught. I want to tell this story when I perform as a storyteller sometime. But I kind of like to know the ending, the exact end. So how did it end? I mean, really? He turned to me and he said, Now. Remember what I told you. Story's got its own speed. Don't rush it. It's going to finish up in its own good time. And his eyes beamed like a boy with a handful of firecrackers at a bonfire. I might add this as a coda to that story. My dad passed away in 2009, and near the end of his life, he wasn't remembering things so good. And he had not just memory issues, but some hallucinatory things going on. And so it was never possible for me to sit down and talk to him about stories and memories again. So he's been gone now for more than 10 years. But every once in a while, I think back on the time when we did sit down together and he told me all of that story that he could remember and all that story that he wanted to tell. And there's something okay with me about not knowing the exact ending to that story. I guess it's like a little secret for him that he left with. And it's a little mystery that I get to hang on to and think about from time to time. So maybe that's not a bad way for a